Before we get started, I just want to acknowledge an error that I made during one of these interviews. Trash and I got into a question of whether he would support overturning the Updated Protection of Life Act, and he correctly noted that it is currently under litigation under Boe v. Dixie. That case has been pending judgment since August 29th, and it simply slipped my memory. But I want to apologize for the error. I'll be a little more careful with my research next time. Thank you again for listening. Hope you enjoy. Former socialist Senator Trash took to Twitter and reversed his anti-abortion stance. He joins us to talk about the switch, along with the newly formed Global Labor Party and the future of gun rights. Then, Puerto Rican Governor Lena Caffey was impeached over a temporary absence, which led to the state being saddled with billions in debt. Assemblyman Josh sat down to discuss his role in the process and the controversy surrounding it. I'm Cabin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Trash, welcome to The Weekly.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. Glad we could finally get you in here. The main reason I wanted to talk to you today, although we had a couple others pop up, was your announcement on Twitter that you had changed your view on one of the main issues that you had run on throughout your career, and that's on abortion. I guess I just wanted to ask, kind of, what brought that about, and does that change your relation with Dixie voters and with how you've kind of represented them in the past?
Yeah, so it definitely doesn't change my relationship to Dixians, because my, like, first and foremost priority has always been economic equality and trying to fight for, like, greater socialist policies and progressive policies, even though I had this kind of, like, one quirk of abortion standing out. And the real reason why I switched here is, as I mentioned in my my Twitter thread, I really have been doing a lot of thinking recently about, I guess, the ethical implications of abortion, where previously I had thought that the mass amount of deaths that abortion could possibly produce would have to outweigh any other issue. Mm-hmm. I have since realized that at 18 weeks, that's a decent enough cutoff point to where you're minimizing the risk of killing babies while simultaneously like actually materially helping women in the long run and furthering this issue of women's rights. So it just kind of came down to this trade-off, which I think I'm now leaning more in favor of pro-choice here.
Okay. You are obviously a big supporter of the several iterations of the Right to Life Amendment that kept running into roadblocks and then eventually passing through the Dixie State Legislature. Would you be supportive of efforts now to turn that back?
I am definitely in favor of kind of like going against the Right to Life Amendment, which I believe was overturned recently in Dixie. Okay. With a new amendment. So I am just in support of all that.
Yes, I may have missed that part. I saw that the updated version cleared the state legislature. I did not see whether it passed the referendum, but
I think it's in,
my research.
it's in court right now, I think.
I see.
That's like the okay. Boe versus Dixie case.
Well, right. This is why I should do more looking before we bring people on. Anyway, the other big kind of announcement of the night, several weeks back, Senator Epsilon made an announcement that he was looking to form a new party known as Global Labor. And that was in part due to a rebuke of your leadership of the former Socialist Party, now United Left. We got word today that has officially been recognized. And I'm just kind of wondering your initial reactions to that. And now that you are the United Labor's chief strategist, whether that impacts your plans for the coming election at all.
Well, I am glad that the left wing is branching out into more kind of like further left positions, because as we all know, the SDP is basically just like a big centrist party. Sure. So the fact that a lot of their members are looking to join a more like progressive type party is great. Mm-hmm. I do think it's like unfortunate that Senator Epsilon is like so against my like contributions to the United Left. I really think that he misunderstands what I've been trying to achieve there. So I do think the party is like unnecessary in that sense, where a lot of the members could easily fit into the United Left, but we're totally happy to work with them because they are a similar like-minded, like kind of not necessarily far left, but definitely left-leaning party, who the United Left leadership has been like looking forward to working with for a couple weeks now.
Have you been in contact with their leadership at all as far as working together as United Front? I'm hearing now the irony of the United Left having a branch off of it that is separate, but is that in the works, or is it going to be kind of a continuation of what we've historically seen between similar ideological parties, in that you're kind of going to beat up on each other until one collapses and one wins out?
Yeah, we've had some like efforts to reach out to them and like talk to them, but so far there's not like a firm plan of kind of like committed cooperation, but I think we're going to be there within a couple days. So yeah, I'd say we're like getting there basically.
Okay. You left official United Left leadership after a pretty long stint as chairman. And recently, the United Left has really seen an uptick in its candidates being elected, I suppose, after a long few months of being one of the more consistent parties that we've seen, however, without seeing a whole lot of electoral success. Do you see any correlation there, or is that simply circumstance of finally the country kind of coming around to your views?
Well, I think the kind of United Left surge began in like July and August, and kind of continued through September. So this has really been like a kind of like a consistent upward trend within the last few months. So me leaving, I was a little like, I guess I was a little afraid to do it earlier, like when the party was just created, because I knew the party needed like firm leadership that could stand with the party at the time. But now with Michigan Lefty as chair, I think like it's perfectly reasonable that this upwards trend is going to continue. Even with me not at the, I guess, like at the helm, I think we're still doing better and better, and the future is only going to get better.
All right. Two more things I wanted to ask. Obviously, the big news of the day and the other half of this episode is me talking through the Puerto Rico situation. And that is, insofar as the United Left has a stronghold where that's really taking place between you guys having the governor and a supermajority of the legislative seats. However, it's pretty unstable right now. And I was wondering basically your thoughts on how really the experiment of a socialist-run state is going, and your thoughts on Governor Caffé's absence and then reappearance in this strange mix that we're now in with an impeachment trial, even though the whole reason for the impeachment seemed to have resolved itself. Just where's your head at on that whole situation?
Well, I think that so far, even with just like a couple of weeks passing since the first like election in Puerto Rico, there have been pretty solid, substantial changes done like to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So I think there definitely is progress and there is change happening with the United Left in charge. I do think that there have been some issues which are unfortunate and are kind of like taking some time to smooth out, like Lena Caffé's absence briefly, which I guess caused the state to take on a lot of debt. But I don't think those are necessarily permanent issues or issues that are like indicative of the United Left being like, I guess, like not very effective in Puerto Rico, like how we've seen with certain other left wing parties, which shall go nameless in Congress. I think Puerto Rico, like the people in Puerto Rico that we have are pretty strong like candidates and strong politicians who will definitely be able to add to what they've done so far in Puerto Rico and make it truly like an actual socialist utopia.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that these aren't permanent issues. The settlement that was recently reached between Dixie and Puerto Rico laid a debt burden on Puerto Rico's shoulders for, I believe it was a little over the next 8 years, which is obviously pretty significantly greater than the timelines we've seen for many of the other states repaying their debts. Is there a failure there, or is that simply the circumstance of there were quirks within the judicial process, and that's kind of going to get dealt with on its own.
Well, I definitely think that Lena Cafe messed up there, and it's fair to give her criticism for that, because honestly, like, even fine, even if she appointed like an AG and the case actually went through and they lost, like, that would be understandable. But going on an absence, you know, it's not the ideal way to take on a lot of debt. But if she really had this, like, important family emergency which she could not leave, then that's just how it is. And now that Puerto Rico is saddled with this debt, they're gonna have to figure out a way to pay it off. And I do think that, like, while that is kind of a longer term issue, it's something which, like we've seen in other states, debt can be undone pretty quickly with smart, like, fiscal planning. So, I mean, I personally believe that all leftists are quite good with that kind of thing. So, hopefully within, like, I don't know, some time, that debt will be reduced pretty greatly.
Okay. The last thing I had for you, you recently started the People Center for Self-Protection. Can you go into a little bit of detail on really what that is? Because all we've seen is that introduction kind of put out toward the public. What's the purpose of that organization, and are we going to see anything more in the coming days?
Sure. So it is a it's basically a firearm association for people with left-wing views, who have historically been neglected by right-wing kind of like right-wing rifle associations such as the NRA, who have always kind of like more they've been closer to right-wing groups, and they've been kind of associated with conservatives generally, whereas really gun culture should be a left-wing thing. If you read through Marx, you'll see he talks constantly about how the proletariat has to be armed. It really should be something that left-wing politicians are very focused on. So basically, the organization is designed to kind of cultivate a culture of left-wing gun protection. And there's basically there's going to be a review once a week of different policy, and there are going to be a couple segments in there about, like, general history of the left wing and guns, and how we can learn with that and move forward and craft gun policy to help the majority of Americans, people who are, for example, like, living in a poor neighborhood, and they need a weapon to protect themselves from crime, so that you can't just die for being poor and not being able to move to a, like, lower crime area. People who are like, people of color who are being attacked for their race constantly by groups like the KKK, and they need something that they need a weapon to protect themselves from groups like that who are, like, straight up going out there trying to kill them. It's a group to protect all those kinds of people, and through allowing people like this to get free membership and access to have a voice on the national scale for to advocate for their own self-protection, I think that's it's a noble goal, and hopefully by this weekend we will start posting our weekly review.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourselves finding common cause with the right simply on the issues, even if you the reasoning behind wanting a more lax gun culture is different between the two sides? Purely in terms of getting policy changed, do you think there can be cooperation there, or is it more the bridges are burned, we have been neglected by these organizations in the past, and we're going to carve our own path?
Well, I think there are definitely similarities in the kind of gun policies that the right and the left, or like the further left and the, like, kind of more classical conservative libertarian right, can work together on. I definitely think that there are common pathways to achieving an America which has great Second Amendment rights to protect yourself. I definitely, like, yes, I think the reasons for us wanting those ends are a little different, but at the end of the day, if the common cause is there, then the left wing can and should work with whoever, like, is willing. If it means getting to a better America where everyone is more equal and everyone has the capability to live a life without fear of just like dying for something that you couldn't control. So yeah, while there are definitely differences in the left wing and the right wing push for gun freedom, I think that we can still work together to achieve a common end, which is like desirable for everyone.
All right, Trash, thank you again for sitting down with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Assemblyman Josh, welcome to the Weekly.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. Could you, just to start us off, kind of recap the whole drama around the court cases involving Puerto Rico and Governor Caffey's absence that led to you writing articles on impeachment?
For sure. So, as we all know, we had a court case versus Dixie, I believe it was Supreme Court 20-14. Prior to the impeachment, I had many conversations with Governor Lina discussing the possible appointment of a counsel to represent Puerto Rico. However, she expressed to me multiple times that she, they themselves wanted to do it, and I expressed my encouragement for them to continue and showed my support for her defense of Puerto Rico. Later on, we saw the court case kind of unfold, and where it kind of struck a nerve for me was the lack of the signing of the settlement on Governor Lina's part. And given the time frame that we had with the Supreme Court, we were really put up against a rock in a hard place, to put it, where Governor Lina just would not respond to what we would ask of her. We continued to ask, myself and a couple of other assemblymen for Puerto Rico, continued to ask the governor to ensure she signs that settlement, especially in the later hours of the Supreme Court deadline. However, it was to no avail, and we received no response from her. And given the fact that we had no Secretary of State to deputize the role of governor, we had no other choice. We found it ourselves that we had no other choice but to write up articles of impeachment against the governor for just sheer negligence.
And those passed pretty quickly. Obviously, the state legislature is controlled by the United Left, and they passed that against their own party's governor. There was a little bit of complication in there in that not every member voted on impeachment, though, of course, it wasn't needed. There was some controversy shortly after over whether or not you would, if nominated, if Governor Caffey is removed and you were put forward as a potential replacement, whether or not you would accept that position as a member of a different party from what was elected. What are your thoughts on that? And I guess, why did that become such an issue?
Another great question. As we all know, we have another state election coming up, and I believe that the position of the United Left in Puerto Rico has been, for the most part, they have had a great, they have had a great job representing the people of Puerto Rico. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I will support whoever, should Governor Lina be removed, I would support whoever the legislator was to elect. On the part of myself being nominated, I believe that we need strong leadership to be able to push Puerto Rico into the future. I believe that we have had we have set a terrible precedent for our first governor, and I believe that we need to change this. I do not see myself running in the next election for governor. And therefore, if I was to be nominated, then I would only serve the remainder of Governor Lina's term. And this is if the legislator could give me the pleasure to serve as governor. However, I believe that Speaker Ricca or Assemblyman Justin could do equally as fine as a job as anyone can.
Okay, so that brings us up to a couple days ago. And at this time, Governor Caffé is still absent, still not taking requests for comment, anything. And then she reappears. And this is after the articles of impeachment have passed, not during, but before the trial began. So now that she is back, can you just justify, as the individual arguing for impeachment in the trial, why that this removal still needs to go through, even if the issue has kind of been resolved?
Personally, I do not believe that the issue has been resolved. And that's one of the reasons that I'm continuing to push this. I know Governor Lina has reappeared. However, there are many key issues where she really did not solve completely and has not solved yet that I think still need to be resolved. And one of these continues to be the executive nominations. They only made one nomination so far out of the cabinet positions, and I believe that that is unacceptable given the circumstances of the executive branch and the apparent incompetence of the executive branch. I believe we need to have some strong leadership in the executive branch to help Governor Lina throughout her learning the ways of becoming a governor. I think another issue we have is though she did sign the settlement case, she did sign it over an hour and a half late. And that put people and state of Puerto Rico at a great unneeded risk should the Supreme Court not have approved that settlement case. We would have been in a very difficult fiscal situation. But I believe that we need to continue with the impeachment trials since majority of the legislature have spoken, and they have spoken to impeach, and I believe that we owe it to those legislators to continue this process and to see it through.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of difficult fiscal times, this is kind of the last thing that I wanted to touch on. That settlement does saddle Puerto Rico with debt for, if it's paid on the schedule that is laid out in the settlement, the next over 8 years. What's the plan to find that funding? And is there any effort to kind of unbury the state from that burden when the other states have either paid off their debts or at least on a much shorter timeline to get it taken care of?
I have not heard of a plan yet to get the debt taken care of. As we all know, it did just pass the Supreme Court. It did just get approved. So we will be coming out with our budget in the coming week or so. But I believe that I think that we should be aiming on re-diversifying our targets for funding, such as we had a strong hearing from the public about defunding the police. I believe we can take some of that money out from the police and give it back to our communities, give it back to the people of Puerto Rico, and help them cope with this tax situation that we're going to be encroaching upon. I believe tax laws for Puerto Rico are grossly outdated, and I believe that they need to be reformed significantly. As well as the healthcare system in Puerto Rico. So I believe all there's many different ways that we can go about dealing with the fiscal situation. But I believe the first and foremost way would be reforming our taxation laws to ensure that it suits a 21st century Puerto Rico, especially with this new burden that we have on our shoulders. that Dixie so kindly threw on us as our welcoming gift into the Union.
Yes, I think some might disagree with the characterization of defunding the police and returning that funding to the community when that funding is being forked over to another state, but I'll leave that one alone. While I have you here, anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I don't think so. I like the direction that the country's going in. I think that we're on a good leftist surge with President Garland, and I look forward to the next election and look forward to serving the people of Puerto Rico.
All right, Assemblyman Josh, thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Since her reappearance in the public eye, we have been reaching out to Governor Lena Caffey in an effort to bring her on the show to get her side of the story. She declined to join the podcast, however, she did give the following statement, which I will read now. On the subject of impeachment, I find it to be a very clear case of politics and very unnecessary during the short time period I was gone. I had no pressing executive business, and while I was gone, I was having the court settlement reviewed by my legal team before signing. This is why I didn't sign it until the day I came back. I recognize I have some fault for not making my situation known to the people, but the matters that pulled me away were very personal and important. On the subject of Puerto Rico as a whole, I am currently working on some things to help get my agenda passed and filling up the cabinet with smart, competent individuals. I also intend to run for re-election so I can have a full term to work with. Here's what else you need to know today. The Associated Press reports that Moderna has been granted approval for their COVID-19 vaccine shortly after the CDC resumed reporting case data. Details on distribution have not yet been released by either the federal or state governments as of recording. Northern Governor Howard Elkridge nominated North Secretary of Education Joey to serve as his lieutenant governor. Joey, a member of the Social Democrats, which dominate the state, has held no office above his current position. This follows weeks of budget crises in the North, in what some view as an effort to sway wavering voters just days away from the October election. Thank you to Trash and Josh for joining the podcast today. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss the new episodes with the latest news. The Weekly is a public record podcast.